Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio with your hosts, Jeff Lohman and Daniel Evans. Yeah, welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Lohman. Sitting next to me is Daniel Evans. Dan, how are you?
Doing quite well tonight. How are you doing, Jeff?
Good. This is the first radio show that we are doing for the 2015-2016 season. And we got a lot of stuff to cover, a short period of time to cover it in. If you want to call into the radio show, it's 323-642-1216. Again, it's 323-642-1216. We can talk about any kind of hockey-affiliated stuff. Granted, we are a Pittsburgh Penguins fan group, but we'll talk about hockey as well. It's before the season, so we can get it all out and going. Before we get started, though, I wanted to give a couple shout-outs. I wanted to talk about Jack Mullet Hockey Show. If you're not familiar with Jack, he does a lot of cool stuff on YouTube, has a really good following, a really smart guy, even if he's the only guy that I know that when we do Google Hangouts is dressed to the nines like GQ, and it always looks like he's wearing makeup, which is weird. But all that being aside, if you're not familiar with Jack Mullet and what he does, go on YouTube, type in Jack Mullet Hockey Show, look him up, and definitely like his videos. He's a really intelligent hockey guy, and he's pretty funny, too. As well, I wanted to talk about the Distressed Band out in Greensburg, Indiana. Really good band. Really, really good band. So if you're on YouTube, check out Distressed Band. Well, it's Distressed Band. I wanted to say hello to Kennedy out there in Toronto. He's out and about doing things tonight. So let's just get right to it. We're going to start with the NHL news. Bad news on the Pittsburgh Penguins front this afternoon. Apparently, Pascal Dupuis is going to be out at least a week with what the Penguins are describing as a blood clot injury. Now, I'm not really specific exactly what that means, but I know that the danger involved in this is that if he were to get hit with a puck or get hit with a stick and it does something inside of his body, it could be really hard to stop the bleeding, so to speak. So that may be what it is. I've been told that it's not very serious, but it's just one of those things you just can't play around with, especially considering Dupuis is, I mean, that's life-affecting there. Dan, what do you think about the Dupuis injury?
Well, what I feel is you'd rather be safe than sorry. You'd rather be cautious about these type of things. As we all know, and it's well documented, last year Dupuis had the blood clot. He was out a bulk of last season because of said blood clot. So I think that this injury that came up and the way that they're treating it right now is basically a precautionary measure just to make sure that Pascal is going to be fine. To my point about that, though, I really hope that things are going to be fine in about a week or so. You know, we'll see him back on the ice practicing and ready to go for the meat and potatoes of the season, to say the least. So all of our thoughts are with Pascal. Get well soon, because your health is definitely more important.
No, I definitely agree with you. And I think at the end of the day, I think they're going to be really careful with anything that happens with Dupuis. And it's one of those things you just got to be careful with. But I don't want you guys to think that he's out, he's got blood clots again. It's almost the same protocol of you play three games, you sit a game. It's just a protocol, and it's what's good for him and his health and his safety. Hey, Mario Lemieux had a birthday today.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to Mario Lemieux, 50 years old, and I guarantee you he could still lace him up and put a puck in the net. In other NHL news, wow, if you're a Montreal fan, the news is just not getting a whole lot better, especially with Zach Kassian. He was in a car wreck, broke his nose and his foot. Looks like he's going to be out a while. He was also almost immediately put into the NHL second stage substance abuse program, and that's usually for guys that have had a repeated problem with drugs or alcohol, so we hope he gets better, but it's not looking good on that front. Also, former Penguin Max Talbot was waived today from the Boston Bruins. Apparently, the Bruins don't want to pay him, and that's okay. You know, I'm sure Talbot will end up somewhere else. Huge news as far as waiver wire goes. Andrew McDonald, who played for the Philadelphia Flyers, he played extensively, really, for the Islanders, but Flyers picked him up a few seasons ago in 2014, signed him to a 6-year, $30 million deal, and waived him today. Now, what's very interesting about that is I did the math, and essentially the Flyers, by waiving him, are going to save $950,000. And, you know, it brings a question. Is when you owe a guy that much money, why is only $950,000 held against your cap? That's an interesting question. We may get to that later. And also, Tim Erickson, who signed with the Penguins, was brought over in a trade. Just really weird stuff with him. Basically, what ended up happening was he made the team on the third. On the third, it was announced that he made the team. On the fourth, the Trib did an article on him saying how, you know, he really played well and made the team. And then, strangely enough, today at 1 o'clock, he got waived. And I don't really understand how that works. And I don't understand why that works. I understand the way a player gets waived and why he gets waived. And the only thing that would make any sense, because the Penguins were going to go with 8 defensemen. But the only thing that sort of makes sense with that is the salary cap issue, which we're going to cover later. But, I'm going to let Dan talk for a few minutes about this Erickson thing, because it's just a situation where, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, why tell the guy he's on the team and then last minute waive him? So I don't know if it's a counterbalance of a player injury or whether it's a counterbalance of our salary cap issue.
Well, I'm of the train of thought that it's a counterbalance of salary cap. It's really, really weird when you come out and you tell someone, hey, you're on the team. The next day, the Trib or the Post-Gazette or whoever writes an article on you saying how good of an asset you were during preseason and how you're going to be a good asset for the team going forward in whatever position you play, whether it be a forward, center, defenseman, et cetera. And then the next day, you're waived, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And so I think this has something to do with the salary cap, which we'll get into later on in the show tonight. But it's just really bizarre on how this all went down. It really is bizarre, because one of the key notes that you have to remember is that hockey is indeed a business. And there are going to be times when teams will cut corners cap-wise where they deem necessary. And sometimes it's moves like this where you're told you made the team, there's a good write-up for you in the local press, and then the next day, boom, you're waived. So it's really perplexing, but I have a funny feeling that something's going to come out about this probably the next day or so as to why Erickson indeed got waived this afternoon. Jeff?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to numbers, and it's probably a little coverage. I'm not sure. And when we get into the salary cap later, we'll talk about Eric Fehr and his LTIR along with Thomas Kunackle and his LTIR and how that's going to play into this. But the last bit of NHL news I wanted to get to, and unless you're living under a rock, which it could be the case right about now, a lot of hockey fans are coming out of the hibernation now with the season starting this week coming up. Rafi Torres took a run at some poor bastard. And I don't know, I looked at the angle three different ways, because you showed it to me in the office, and I looked at the different angles. But one of the most unique things is I got a picture sent to me from somebody that's friends with Elaine Savage, and it shows a picture of the point of contact with Rafi Torres, and the point of contact was his shoulder to the poor bastard's chest. There was no hit to the head. Now, here's my argument. Rafi Torres, if you look up historically, over 80-plus games suspended in the last 4 years. Four and a half, five maybe. Is he a victim, Dan? Do you think he's a victim of his own behavior the past 5 years, and that's why he's getting a humongous suspension now? Or do you think it's just more of a symptom of the NHL trying to put a stop to this kind of shit?
A little bit of both. When you look at guys like Rafi Torres, Matt Cook, Aaron Nashem, even Sean Avery before all of them, when it comes to run-ins with the disciplinary committee, the three of those players alone could write a book on it, on literally on how to get in trouble with the disciplinary committee. So, in essence, this could be sending a message not only to Rafi, but other players that there's a new sheriff in town. We're going to be more concerned about player safety. We're laying down the law. Now, my first initial reaction was ban them for the entire year without pay. The punishment that went down today, 41 games, half a season without pay. So basically he's losing a little over $440,000 this season without pay for something that, honestly, yeah, was probably to send a message. And with Rafi, you know what you're going to get. Just like if anyone were to pick up Matt Cook, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a guy that, when he was in Pittsburgh, they tried to clean his act up a little, but there was a knee-to-knee that he did in Minnesota under Mike Yeo, who was a former Penguins assistant coach under Dan Bylsma. And everyone thought, of course, well, the old Matt Cook is back, the dirty bastard. And what do you have when it comes to Rafi Torres? It's a long laundry list of what he's done. Infamously was the one hit that he did to Marian Hossa, where Hossa was taken out on a stretcher. And I'll never forget, in the middle of that suspension, the home opener in Phoenix for the following season. He's still in suspension, but of course they want to acknowledge all the players are going to be on the ice. Rafi got a hero's welcome. You know, like he was a town folk hero for doing what he did.
He was.
You know, he was in Arizona. And, you know, and depending on how you feel about Hossa, hey, the guy's a hero. You know, he took out Hossa. But in my view, this was basically a double-edged sword. It was to send a message to the players that maybe the disciplinary committee might try to get a little bit more strict on the players, but also think that Rafi's past also caught up with Rafi in this point. So it's a double-ended sword. Jeffrey?
No, I agree with you. I think any time you play a certain style and you play a certain way, eventually, hey, look at Sean Avery, good example of that. You know, he stands in front of Brodeur, he starts waving his arms like a chicken with his head on fire, doing anything he can to try to distract him. And the referee stood there like, well, what the fuck's going on here? Because we've never seen a guy do this stuff before. And then eventually they add the rule and you can't do stuff like that. However, here's going to be my argument against the NHL suspending Rafi Torres for that amount of games. If you're suspending him because he's a bad boy and consistently takes headshots, fine. This wasn't a headshot. All the other ones, most definitely. So if you're going to suspend the guy, that's fine. But do you think, and I'm asking you this question because I think it's very important, if Rafi Torres scored 75 points a year, do you think this would be a different story?
Yeah, it would be. Because you know how your Alex Ovechkin, for a perfect example, he leads from his skates. Matter of fact, Jeff and I get all the Caps games down here. So last night we actually took in the Caps game, which was basically the Caps versus the NHL, the AHL affiliate of the Islanders for the most part. And lo and behold, in the first period, to do a hit in the middle of the ice, what's Alex doing again? Leading from the skates again, as if it was nobody's business, but it was time to get that done. Just to send a message to the poor kid, I'm thinking to myself, this has to stop, because when you lead from your skates to do a hit, it is intent to injure. And to some people, I might be a little too harsh about that, but it's true that when you lead from your skates, you're trying to intentionally take someone out of the game to send them back to the dressing room to get looked at. So do I think it's a double standard because Rafi Torres doesn't score 70 to 100 points a season? Oh, hell yeah.
Well, and this is going to upset a lot of New Jersey fans. I used to watch Scott Niedermeyer throw cheap shot after cheap shot after cheap. I mean, Eric Lindros is a good example. He was never the same after that last shot he took. Nope. He was never the same. But yet, Stevens is never suspended because Stevens is an elite player in the league. The same can be said for a bunch of other guys. Matt Cook's a disgrace. I've always said he was a disgrace. Mm-hmm. And the fact that anybody wanted him back in Pittsburgh, in my opinion, was a little bit of a joke. Because there's players that there's a big difference. And that's what you hear all the time in the NHL, is you hear, okay, well, this player A toes the line. You know, towing the line means you play on that fringe or that edge. Rafi Torres doesn't play over the line. He runs the goddamn line over. That's what he does. And that's the type of player he is. And so I understand from that perspective why he's been suspended. But I just think half the season is, you know, San Jose is just going to have to cut him loose at some point. I mean, they can't afford to continue to pay this guy. If you want to call in, it's 323-642-1216. And, you know, if you want to call in and talk about something totally unrelated, fine. If you want to talk about Hugh Hefner, I don't care. You know, I'm sure we can add some sort of hockey reference into Hugh Hefner or something. We got a lot to cover. There's a bunch of stuff I want to cover, but I'm going to go down a little differently than I said I was, Dan. So just give me 1 second. Okay. There is a guy that works for TSN. His name is Scott Cullen, and he's a dipshit. Now, let me explain why he's a dipshit. He's the same type of, jerk off, okay, like Elliot Friedman. Elliot Friedman, everybody knows what he did. He writes BS about Malkin. He gets printed as truth. He starts backtracking. It causes all kinds of problems for everybody involved. Scott Cullen is no better. What Scott Cullen has graced me with this evening, I wish I had a theme song for this, but what Scott Cullen has graced me with is pure stupidity of epic Canadian proportions. And here's what I mean by that. Every year this dunce comes out with how he thinks every player in the NHL is going to fare. So he'll rank guys from like 1 to 10, and he'll predict. Aha! He'll predict how many goals Sidney Crosby's going to have, how many goals Malkin's going to have, how many goals Nazem Kadri's going to have, how many goals P.K. Subban's going to have, how many goals Steve Downey's going to have. So you get my point. So on this list, and this is where it gets very interesting, he picked Sidney Crosby to lead the league in scoring. He also picked him to win the Art Ross Trophy.
Yeah, Art Ross.
He picked him to have 31 goals, 67 assists for 98 points. Now, I'm not scoffing at 98 points because I think it could be possible. And, yeah, I'm a little happy Crosby's on the top of the list. But that's not why I'm upset. Number two on his list was Alexander Ovechkin with 53 goals, 34 assists for 87 points. Here's where I start to get a little crazy. Look, there's always going to be a debate, and Dan, I'll get in on this in 2 seconds. There's always going to be a debate on which one of these guys, albeit Crosby or Alexander Ovechkin, which one is the best player. I am here to tell you right now that I'm not going to tell you who the best player is, but if you think that Crosby's going to outscore Ovechkin by 11-plus points, you're out of your mind. And Steve Stamkos isn't in the top five. Are you kidding me? Or John Tavares? Taze? Kane? Are you serious? Number three on this list is Phil Kessel, which I find hilarious. He thinks Phil Kessel's going to score 40 goals and 45 assists for 85 points. I don't have a problem with that. Where is Evgeny Malkin on this list? Well, he's number 16. They don't think he'll push over 24 goals next season. Max 70 points. And according to this dipshit, Malkin will be tied in points with Connor McDavid, who's never played in the NHL. And it gets better, because this is the one facet that is going to blow your mind. Chris Letang, 103rd overall. Dan, what's the matter? You're giving me that look like Stephen A. Smith over there. 103rd overall. Okay, now, if you don't know anything about Chris Letang, he had a stroke, had the concussion last season. He was still 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th in the league in points and plus-minus, okay? He had over 50 points. How is it that he's 103rd overall behind P.K. Subban, Dustin Byfuglien, Carlson, Keith Yandle, Duncan Keith, Shea Weber, and Sasquatch, Burns? He does. He looks like Sasquatch. He's got no teeth. He's got brown hair, a huge beard. He looks like a Sasquatch, for God's sakes. You know? Harry and the Hendersons. You know what I mean? Give him a cookie. I don't know. But the whole point is, he ranked Chris Letang 103rd in the league. I'm sorry, but I think Chris Letang is in the top 50 of the league. The top 15. Hell, I'll even say the top 10. So the problem I have isn't with the fact that this guy thinks that Crosby will win the scoring title. That's fine. or Ovi will come in second, or Kessel will come in nicely in third, or Malkin will be 16th, tied with McDavid, which, yeah, that's laughable. But Letang 103rd. I don't get that. When is Chris Letang going to get some respect? He's not only the best defenseman the Penguins have had probably in the last 15 years, he's extremely offensive-minded. He's a leader. And yet, he could come in. He was like neck and neck with Carlson last year, 1-2 for most of the season until he got hurt. But yet, PK Subban somehow shows up on this list way ahead of him. And Dustin Byfuglien, you got to be kidding me, right? Carlson, okay, he's probably one of the best in the league. They don't mention Kopitar. He had Voinov. He had the wife beater, Slavin Voinov, on that list. And he didn't even play last season. How can that guy be ahead of Letang? So once again, Canada, you've given us a lot of things. You've given me hockey. You've given me poutine. You've given me great beer. But you give me idiots and dipshits like this guy Scott Cohen. With that, I'm going to let Dan have his say.
Scott, this is whatever deity you believe in. What the hell are you thinking? Okay, let me first say this first and foremost. Evgeny Malkin, tied with Connor McDavid in number 16. Connor McDavid is a rookie, okay? And I'm going to start by saying this. Connor McDavid was brought in, and before he even played a shift, before he even got drafted by Edmonton, much less played a shift or practiced with the Oilers organization, he's going to have 70 points? Seriously, dude, no. Crosby, yeah, the stats are about right for about 98 points. Ovi's not going to get... I could see 53 goals from Ovi, but not 34 assists. And the reason why I can't see 34 assists from Ovechkin is because of the fact that the guy is shot hungry. He loves to shoot, 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 and just keep pelleting goals, you know, through the net. That's what he likes to do. Assists really aren't his game, as opposed to Crosby, who... in the last several years, has become less reliant on goals and more of an assist-type guy, because it is true that most that play on his line end up benefiting from having Crosby on that, being on the line with Sidney Crosby. Kessel could very well have a 60 to 80-point season as a part of the Penguins. He's going to be on the Crosby line, and honestly, I think for Phil Kessel, the trade that the Penguins got for Kessel worked out to Kessel's advantage because he gets a fresh start. Now to Chris Letang. Do you mean this idiot Cullen means to tell me that a guy who usually gets mentioned for the most part every year in the Norse Trophy area the entire time, you mean to tell me that Chris Letang is only going to be 103rd in scoring? Do you really mean to tell me that? No. I can honestly say that I see Letang having a really good year because he's a well-balanced player. If he can stay healthy, the Penguins are looking at someone who could very well win the Norse Trophy easily. And that's with the likes of Carlson and PK Subban, who are both good defensemen. But with Letang, you have the total package. You have a defenseman that also scores. So, 103rd. Oh, boy. You know, Canada, you've given us a really good film series with Cube. We've got some good friends in Canada, to say the least. But Scott, dude, really? You're making that guy, you're making Elliot Friedman look credible at this point, and that's saying a lot because Friedman's just a friggin' lutz. Jeff?
I think it's just the narrative. You know, it's just the narrative. And, you know, speaking of Canadian idiots, And the reason why I say Canadian idiots is because, you know, look, I'm a big fan of Don Cherry. I'm a big fan of Sportsnet at times. And I mean, Hockey Night in Canada was like the greatest thing ever invented, right? But here's the problem I have. I watched Sportsnet today, and I had a very, very interesting viewing experience with McLean, who doesn't like to let anybody talk. Then you have Nick Kyprios, who looks like he was on drugs. Like he didn't want to, or he was hungover. And I don't know who the twerp was on the left-hand side. But they talked about Toronto for 45 minutes and broke down everything Babcock said. They broke down everything about Dion Phaneuf last year and what it was, the Jersey Gate and not saluting the fans gate. And, you know, I understand that Ontario people love Toronto Maple Leafs. I totally get it. I've loved the Leafs since I was a kid. But you guys suck, and you just need to come to terms with that. Come to terms with it. Babcock is not going to turn this around in a season. You are in for a long haul. You are in for a couple Christmases of what do we do with our Leafs gear? Wipe our ass with it or just throw it away? Because that's where Toronto is. Toronto has made inept decisions for years now. So the point I'm trying to make is when I have to listen to two guys bicker with each other about a team who isn't going anywhere right this second, it's a little lopsided. And the minute somebody mentions Montreal on Sportsnet, then it becomes it's like a carnival of sleepy people. And so from my perspective, and the point I'm bringing up is that they brought up Elliot Friedman. And they brought him up because apparently he had broken some sort of news about something involving somebody somewhere, and I just had to stop. And I looked at Dan, and I said, Dan, what the fuck? You know, I don't want to swear, but that's like, I don't have any other words for that. It's like, these guys, it's like taking Darren Dreger seriously. Today I saw on Twitter, and this is, you guys will love this, it was like June 6th, Phil Kessel not coming to Pittsburgh. What I told Dan on June, whatever the date was, I just announced, I told Dan, there's a deal for Kessel coming over. They're looking for the extenuating pieces to go with this trade. And he says, well, it will be interesting. And I told him, he's coming. It's just going to be a matter of switching Scuderi around for a couple other guys. So Darren Dreger comes out, not going to happen. June 7th, Phil Kessel's been traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins. So the point is that guys like Elliot Friedman don't know anything more than Joe Blow, who sams the ice down at your local rink. You know, hockey is a mental thing. It's an intelligence thing. Anybody can come out of the side of their mouth and say this, this, and this, and this. But these guys are always notoriously wrong, and I don't know why after the Malkin thing that these people take Elliot Friedman seriously. You know, there's only one guy that I truly believe. There's a couple. Pierre LeBrun is one.
Yeah.
He always knows what he's talking about. He doesn't lead anybody astray. You know, there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them. But Darren Dreger and that ass wipe is not one of them. But I'll let you have your thoughts on Sportsnet, Dan.
Sportsnet reminds me a lot of Mike Milbury on NBC. You take what they say with a grain of salt. With Milbury, and we get him down here, especially on Wednesday night rivalries and whatnot, whenever NBC has a Sunday game. Milbury and his sidekick, Keith Jones, y'all have to remember something about Mike Milbury and himself. He ruined successfully two organizations. I mean, one of them just happened to be the New York Islanders, as in now that they've moved to Brooklyn, I hardly doubt he'll be at Barclays Center because Islanders fans have not forgotten what Mike Milbury did to that storied franchise on Long Island. When it comes to Keith Jones, there's a sign on his face every day that says, I never won a Stanley Cup, and I'm bitter about it because he played with Washington and he plays and calls games for the Philadelphia Flyers. And he just has this little sigh in his voice that, oh, I never want to come. When I think of Friedman, I think of a carnival barker or someone in a used car lot that's trying to sell you a lemon. And the minute if he gets the sale done and you pull off with that lemon, he starts laughing behind your back because he sold you a bale of goods. You know, what he said about Malkin and then later redacted, the only reason why he redacted is because the blowback was that big for what he did. Yeah, what he did, there was just so much blowback from it, not only from the Pittsburgh press, not only from the Penguins, but from a bunch of fans. Jeff and myself, we talked about it on our old website, for crying out, on our old blog, for crying out loud. And he had no choice but to redact and say, well, it wasn't said like this and it wasn't my intention. Bullshit. You wanted more readers. You wanted more viewers. And that's what you do for ratings and viewers and readers. Is you go out and you spin things however you want to do it. We know how the business works. Point blank.
Yes, sir, we certainly do. Listen, if you want to call in, 323-642-1216. We've got a bunch of things we're going to cover, and right now we are going to get into some Pittsburgh Penguins stuff because that's what everybody hopefully is listening to this radio show for. But I would be really remiss to tell you, we do have a website. You can go to www.pensvlogpost.com. It's up right now. We open officially tomorrow for business. So if you want to hit up our website, www.pensvlogpost.com, you can call us in at 323-642-1216. We can talk about anything you want except for wrestling. I will not talk about wrestling.
That's right.
But watch my buddy Jarrett call in and say, I want to talk about Ric Flair. Woo! But no, we're not going to talk about wrestling. What we are going to talk about right now is the additions that the Penguins have made. Things have, you know, granted, really changed since last season. We've got a bunch of new faces in, and we're going to talk about a couple of them for a few minutes, and then we're going to get into some, like, some serious stuff. So, you know what? Why don't we do this? I'll give you a name, Dan, and you tell me whether you would take him or leave him. Nick Bonino.
Bonino is one of those wait-and-see guys, and the reason why I say that is because of the waiver wire that hit today and whatnot. The first person, and he's on the list to discuss when it comes to getting rid of, is Scuderi. But Bonino, I'd take him for now.
Yeah, I agree. I think Bonino is definitely going to be a third line player, and that's pretty much the way things are going to go. I think for the most part. Sorry, whoever just called in, you can call back. I didn't mean to hang up on you. Sorry about that. The second guy on the list is Cullen. Do you keep him or throw him away?
Right now, I would probably keep him. But if a trade came out that was pretty decent, I would throw him away.
Cullen's going to be a good fourth-line guy. Whether or not how well he's going to fit into this system is going to be one thing. It's a situation where the guy's in his – Cullen's got to be in his 40s. I think he's 40. And, he's in his 40s, and I think at the end of the day, I think he's going to help round out and support and give us some depth on that bottom end. But I'm not really sure. You know, it's just going to be a wait-and-see game. Your favorite, Bobby Farnham. And I'm going to let you take the mic here for a minute because I know how much you love Farnham. And by the way, I would take Bobby Farnham.
Bobby, I have vouched for you for the, you know, all last season. I vouched for you to come up knowing well that you had grit and a stick and skill, no doubt. Here's your chance, my boy, to come up and show what you're worth right here, right now. Prove yourself. That way you can stay here more than just on a two-way, but build yourself up to the NHL level and be in Pittsburgh full-time. That would be great. Because Farnham's who we need on that fourth line. Just throw a little bit of a gig in there. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it back to Jeff.
Now, I think Bobby Farnham coming up is a good idea this year. And here's why. Sestito did not have the hockey ability that the Penguins needed him to have. However, I think what Farnham brings to the table is some grit, tenacity, and speed. And I think you're going to find very quickly that beautiful Bobby is a fan favorite in Wilkes-Barre for a reason. The way he plays, just the style he plays, the grit style is great. The fact that he can get guys agitated and upset is great, but he can also skate very, very fast, and he also can hit very, very hard. And he's going to work on the penalty kill, and I think that that's important because you can't rely on you cannot rely on guys like Dupuy all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You are on Penn's Vlog Post Live. Who are we talking to?
It's Heather. Hi, Jeff.
Excuse me?
It's Heather. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Heather. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to get through a whole list of players. It's not often easy. What's on your mind, kid?
I'm very concerned about B. Very, very concerned with B. And I'm wondering when Fleury is going to, will he say, hey, wait a minute, I'm a good goalie, but I'm kind of tired of being the whipping boy season after season?
I think that's a really, really interesting point, and it's a good point to make. And I think you're right. The biggest problem that this team has is defensively they're not nearly as strong as they need to be. And I think we can all agree that there is sort of a shadow cast over Marc-Andre Fleury a lot of the time. And the way you get around that is you don't make the guy stand on his head for 40-some, 50-some games every year. And if the defense isn't going to play well, there's only so much that definitely Fleury can do. But I agree with you. I think the defense definitely is going to be a problem. And they have to give Fleury a little help. I mean, they have to. He can't do it all on his own. Dan, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, I've got some thoughts. I'm envisioning something that Jeff and I watched last night where Ramsey's yelling, nobody is going to watch my back here. At this point, it's got to be Fleury yelling at his defense going, who's going to watch my back? I can't stand on my head for 50 games a season. You know, and
right.
He cannot stand on his head. I agree with Jeff on this. There's only so much handstanding you can do every night. And I don't have confidence in any goaltender in Pittsburgh. You could have Lundqvist. You could have Quick. In front of this defense, and you know what? We'd have the same results. They would all say, who's got my back here? And they would want to go. As great as Lundqvist is.
Right. But does Fleury have the balls to say? I don't know.
No.
You see what
I don't believe you. I hear what you're saying, Heather, and I don't think that Fleury has the guts to stand up to his teammates and say, guys, I need help out here. I'm doing all this work, but trying to outscore every night without defense isn't going to get us anywhere. And another person who could actually speak up in defense of Fleury is one of the captains, or to be one of the alternates, or Sid Crosby himself to say, look, guys, we have got to defend our goaltender. He's out there watching our back. We have to watch his back. I would love for that to happen. You know, a little bit of team solidarity goes a long way in an 82-game season. Jeff, your thoughts about that?
My opinion is this. Fleury shouldn't have to say anything. He shouldn't have to ask anybody to get out of his way and start playing better. But if they're not going to do it, you better believe he's going to open his mouth immediately. He's going to say something because he's very vocal back there anyway. And there's just, I just don't think there's any way he's going to put up with that mess. You know, because if he has an off year on his own without the defense being the issue, you're going to start to see this management move towards a different goalie. Unfortunately, that's just the way it's going to be. But I agree. I fully agree that the defense has got to stand up. And at the end of the day, if they don't, this team is just going to have a multitude of problems. And, of course, they're going to blame Fleury because he's the easy guy to punch. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's my concern, is that we may lose him because he may say, you know, I'm tired of being the whipping boy. I'm tired of it season after season after season. And I just don't want it to come to that point where he says, trade me. I'm tired. I can't stop every damn puck.
I agree with you, and I think one of the biggest problems, I think, and I can be just as brutal as a lot of other people when it comes to the ebb and flow of Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, let's face it, he has some games where he's just not there, and there's been a couple of seasons
right.
He just hasn't been there. However, at the same time, you look at what he did last year, and last year that's the only reason why we even got into the playoffs. And I agree with you. I would hate to see the guy traded because the team in front of him is not playing up to expectations. And that becomes an owner and a management issue. If management is not going to appreciate the people that have gotten them to where they are, then that says more about them than it does the player. But you're right. Unfortunately, it's going to fall on his shoulders. I don't think that Fleury will ever ask for a trade out of Pittsburgh. I think he'll just be traded out of Pittsburgh. And I think that's ultimately the way that that's going to go down. Dan, you got any final thoughts on that?
I would hate to see the guy go. But if this keeps up, I'm sure they'll contact Fleury's agent and, you know, gauge his thoughts on whether or not Fleury would want to maybe go elsewhere. Because I'm not sure if he has a clause in his contract or not when it comes to a movement clause or not. But I just hate seeing the poor guy hung out to dry every night. It's a lot like,
yeah.
Do you really think that Lundqvist would want to be hung out to dry every night?
No.
You know, and you
no.
talk about a guy who's an impeccable, a really good goaltender. That's a guy who hasn't won a cup yet. He hasn't been a part of a cup-winning team yet in Lundqvist. But he's got 4 more years in Pittsburgh, so he's either going to get traded because they think they've gone as far as they can go with him, or he'll finish out his career in Pittsburgh in these 4 years. So it's just a wait-and-see thing, but I hope things shape up.
And we wanted to thank Heather for calling in, but we've got a lot of other people calling in that we've got to get to. So if we hung up on you, we didn't mean to. It's just kind of the way things are rolling right now. 323-642-1216. Heather, thank you very much for calling in and talking about Marc-Andre Fleury. We always enjoy a conversation involving our favorite flower, don't
yeah.
we? And moving down the list to take him or leave him, we went through Bonino, we went through Cullen, we went through Farnham. David Perron, do you keep him or do you trade him?
For right now, you keep Perron, but a lot is going to hedge on that bet with Perron, with how he produces between now and the trade deadline. At least that's how I see it. I'm going to give it to Jeff for his thoughts about that.
End of the day, Perron has, at one point, he was considered a top six. I think at this point on the Penguins, and we'll kind of get into the lineup if we have time, he seems to bounce back and forth between the first and the third. It looks like now he's going to end up a fourth liner. He also makes $4.5 million, and at some point, you have to start considering your options down the line. Just really quickly, before we get to some big topics, Sergei Plotkinov, take him or leave him?
Take him.
All right. I think we both agree. Plotkinov's a gritty guy. He appears to be a trash talker as well, which I happen to enjoy. And I think the line of Malkin, Hornquist, and Plotkinov are going to be – it's going to be a dynamic line. I think that line's going to be better than the Crosby, Kessel, and Kunitz line, which gets me to a whole other issue. All right. Adam Klendening.
Not sure yet.
Not sure yet. Me neither. I haven't seen enough of him, but apparently he made this team. Daniel Sprong, 18-year-old rookie.
Send him down, let him grow a little.
See, that's where I sort of differentiate a little bit. I think that as far as Sprong goes, he made a hell of an impact in camp. I mean, a great impact in camp, and I think he's going to be a good player. But this is the same conversation that you and I had about Olli Maatta. Was Maatta ready for prime time? And I said, and my exact words were, send him back to the OHL, give him another year. The Penguins didn't do that, and he got hurt within the first, 12 weeks of the
mm-hmm.
season. Then he comes back, and his shoulder still isn't right. He gets hurt again. So while I'm a big fan of 18-year-old kids coming into the league, I also think it's appropriate that these kids get another year or another year and a half. Now, he's got 9 games to figure it out, and he's either going to succeed or the Penguins will cut their losses and he'll go back to juniors for a year or two. But I like what I see. I mean, he seems to have the NHL speed. He's got the NHL shot. He knows how to position himself, and that's something you can't teach. That's something you're born with. That's something that just is you. Now, before I get to another topic, which is going to be more of an NHL topic, and I'm going to try to get to as much as I can, but we've got so much stuff going on. 323-642-1216. You want to call in and talk about the Maple Leafs? Go ahead and give us a call. We'll talk about the Maple Leafs for a while. I wanted to talk about the surge of Bo Bennett for a minute. I am just absolutely not a Bo Bennett fan. Everybody knows that. I haven't been for a long time. I've called for that kid to be traded out of Pittsburgh for a used puck bag, for the love of God. A used puck bag. However, Bennett's doing something a lot differently. Not only did he go out and gain 20 pounds, which is great because now I guess we can take the bubble wrap moniker off of him, but it looks like he can hold his own in the corners, and that's really important. This is a kid that had all the speed in the world, shot like he had a mallet on the end of his stick. I mean, just couldn't, you know, passing, he couldn't keep up with the lanes. But for some reason, I think Bo Bennett's getting it, finally. You know, he goes from making $950,000 a year to Rutherford saying, we're not giving you over eight, buddy. You know, you're going to take a pay decrease, you're going to hit that fourth line, and this is it. Last chance. But if you look at the two guys who I think had the best preseason camp, obviously Sprong, he had big goals, and Bennett had big goals. Granted, Kessel played great too. So did some other guys. But those two are the ones that really stuck out to me. Now, I know you've been a critic of Bo Bennett, and I know the listeners, many of you, I know, you can sit there shaking your head no, but I can tell you 90% of you said, oh, Bennett, get him off the ice. But Bo Bennett's playing good hockey now. Now, whether or not that transitions to the regular season, who knows? But maybe, just maybe, this is the rebirth of one Bo Bennett. Daniel, what say you?
Sunshine. Okay, let me stop. A little note to, little ode to mine, you know, one of my favorite singers, John Denver, there for a sec. I would love to see Bo Bennett have a resurgence in Pittsburgh. You know, he's had injuries. Matter of fact, on our Facebook page, for example, a good friend of ours, Johnny Morgan, actually had one of those little signs with Bennett. And we used to keep track of how many days that he wasn't injured, you know, consistently in a row. You know, kind of like at the work site where, you know, this site has had, you know, X amount of days without an incident. The previous record was this amount of days. Let's keep, you know, this place a safe work environment. I really think that Bo Bennett gets it. And if that's the case, he could be a good presence on that fourth line. And maybe if he has to go up to that third line, he might be able to produce there as well. Because if it's one thing that I've noticed about him in this preseason that I hope carries over, besides the fact that he's no longer scared of the shadow, and that he's scoring goals, important goals at that, the Deer Cotton headlights look isn't there anymore, where he just freezes and just stands there. I mean, the kid is really showing that he gets it. Maybe he's fully healthy and he's able to come out and show the get up and go that we liked in him, that we liked when he was in the minors with the Baby Pens, that made him being dubbed as one of the Penguins of the future. Who knows? But I really hope he succeeds this season. I've been one of his ardent critics, but you don't kick someone when they're up or working their way up. You help boost and encourage them. Bo, you have the potential. Get out there and shine. Go out there and say point blank, I'm changed. I've put on some pounds. I'm stronger. I'm a little bit grittier. I'm still speedy. And I can get that puck in the net. Because the more reliable you prove yourself on the ice, the more likely you are to get a better deal come the end of next year. Jeffrey, your thoughts?
Put the puck in the net. That's all he has to do. That's all he's ever been required to do, and be responsible defensively. I cannot speak to that enough. You don't know how many NHL players have made their careers just being a defensive player. Originally, that's why everybody liked Brandon Sutter. And then once they realized he couldn't shoot or score, you know, they tried to turn him into a defensive specialist. But I wanted to go back to something Heather said, because she brought up a really, really, really solid point. And it's been something that we have been talking about throughout the preseason. Let's face it, the Penguins did not have the best preseason. They were outscored majority of their games. In the majority of their games, only one line scored. And that was a big problem that we had last season. We had one line that did it all, and if that one line got closed out, forget it, sayonara, game over, Splitsville, whatever. And so where we're at right now is that Rutherford made and addressed the situation, and we have some depth on the forward. What we don't seem to have is any cohesion on the back end defensively. Now, bringing back Ian Cole, big fan of that move. Ben Lovejoy's still here. I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of Scuderi still being here. But I understand the situation that the Penguins are in cap-wise. However, and we talked about Jack with this. And Jack, if you're out there, dude, call us, 323-642-1216. Give us a buzz. One of the unique things that he said and what we talked about with him was that it seems like Rutherford addressed every single forward issue you could possibly have on a team and forgot or didn't pay any attention to the defense. Now, maybe he relied on the fact that Johnston said that Derek Pouliot was ready. Well, obviously he's not. He may have played well in spurts, but now he's back in the AHL. Dumoulin, same thing, struggled big time this preseason. Klendening, I haven't seen enough of. Erickson, I thought, was on this team. Apparently, he's not. But the question becomes, and this is where I want everybody to put on their thinking caps for a minute. Okay? Good job, Dan. If you are a general manager and you say, you know what, 2 years ago, I don't want Orpik. I don't want Niskanen. They're old. They're overpaid. We're not going to pay them. Go get your money. Okay. Then he doesn't replace them. Then he tells Paul Martin, go ahead and go get your money. We can't afford to pay you. And you watch Paul Martin sign for less money than he was making in Pittsburgh for a 3-year deal in San Jose. And he doesn't replace him. And he talks about how he doesn't want age on this team. He wants the youth injection. He wants that cohesion. Bring us the youth. And then he goes out and brings in Sergei Gonchar, of all people. Now, I'm not knocking Sergei Gonchar at all. I think given the time, given the place, given nostalgia, Sergei Gonchar was great. 5 years, what was he on the scene? 5 years, mm-hmm. Won a cup with us. Great guy, great influence to have. Can't skate anymore, can't shoot anymore. -8 in the preseason. You cannot keep going back to the same well and expecting different results. He didn't want age, but what he was left with was, that's all, folks. I didn't go out and get a defenseman. And guys like Franzen were still sitting around that we could have easily gotten if we just removed Lovejoy, who Rutherford called a mistake. So if it's a mistake, you don't keep the mistake, you get rid of the mistake, right? So the issue is this team will be good offensively. Defensively, oh boy. It's either going to be good or it's going to be miserable. And I'm going to let Dan talk about the D for a few minutes here.
All right, folks, hear me out for a minute. JR did the same shtick in Carolina. He focused heavily on the forwards, really didn't pay too much mind of what was happening with the defensemen. And he also overpaid for players as well. Bear in mind, Jordan Staal is getting paid second-line money for being a third-line center. I'll use that as an appropriate example. And yes, that was done while JR was out in Carolina. Now, as far as the defense goes, this is like a dead man walking issue. Scuderi and Lovejoy had a place on this team 6-7 years ago. Matter of fact, if we all remember correctly, Ben Lovejoy was always that seventh defenseman. He was always on the bench, unless needed, in the middle of the game, you know, in a game, in which case they'd bring him in. But usually, towards the end of his time in Pittsburgh, he was a healthy scratch every single night. You know, when you have the AGH injury report, healthy scratches, D, Ben Lovejoy. It was there every night, almost like clockwork. You know, we'd all say, oh, he's warming the bench, or he's in the locker room somewhere. But he's not available on the ice. He was a healthy scratch because of the fact that he wasn't that good. And I cannot stress enough the age issue, okay? Age is important. As your body gets older, it wears down. I'm 41 and a half years old. I know for a fact my body is not what it was 20 years ago. I've done several things that should or should not have been done, but I'm older. It takes a little bit of a lump in my step, but I'm not the person I was 20 years ago. And athletically, I probably don't have the breath that I had 20 years ago, much less any skills that I might have had. There are very few people in their 40s that can play an NHL caliber game. Jágr is going to put up some major points in Florida, and he's close to my age, if not a little bit older. I love Gonchar. I really do. I appreciate what he did as far as being a leader goes, but the ship has sailed. The same thing goes with Lovejoy and Scuderi. And eventually, you have to set aside your personal feelings of nostalgia and how good a person is. Do what's best for the business and the future of your team, and look towards youth and build them up. Because I'm going to tell you this right now, Letang's not going to be here forever. Neither were Crosby, neither were Malkin. We hope that them, along with Kessel and along with Fleury, will hang around for about five, six, seven, eight more years. But the reality is that hockey is a very physical, demanding sport. And it is so physically demanding that with some players, depending on how their bodies are built, they could be in the prime of their careers, and in an instant, a career-ending injury could hit. We don't want to see that out of any player at all, no matter what team they're on. But we also know that you need to have youth in there to develop, to build your way up. So as your players that are in your core get older, you're less reliant on your core and more so building up a core to replace them in due time. So this whole thing about bringing in Scuderi and Lovejoy and also Gonchar for the tryout, it was nostalgia. I'm all for nostalgia. Ask Jeff. The music I listen to would be considered nostalgia these days. But it doesn't make it right to bring in guys in their late 30s, early 40s, just for the sake of remember what happened in that cup, in those two cup runs. After a while, you got to leave the ship alone and get younger, and get ready for the next generation. Because that's what's important, as much as we have the talent that's there now, that's in their, say, mid-late 20s, close to 30. Jeff?
Well, I think it's a strong point. I think at this point, nostalgia has to go out the window. And I think I was probably speaking more in the reference of, you know, the Penguins got three guys, well, we'll say two at the very minute in Lovejoy and Scuderi that combined age is like 70-something, you know, and at some point you have to look at what you're – I never disagreed with Ray Shero when he brought Scuderi back. What I disagreed with wasn't even the money. It was the length of the contract, because Scuderi at that point was 32, 33,
yeah.
And you know he's got maybe two seasons left in his game, a little more spring in his step. And I'm not saying Scuderi is the worst defenseman we've ever had. But if you look at the Corsi numbers and the Fenwick numbers, he is. And he can try to validate himself into the trib by saying, I fully expect to be on this roster opening night, and I've earned my right. Sure, you've earned your right, but you're the worst defenseman statistically on this team, have been for two seasons. Three, four, whatever, since he's come back. This team, here's what you're going to have to watch this for this upcoming season. And we're not going to go into it now because we may do a show tomorrow that'll go more in depth as far as what you guys need to expect for this season. But the only thing I'm going to say is the Panthers only had one line that was scoring in the preseason. This is the same problem we had last regular season. I would think it's going to get better. But without a good solid D, you know, who knows? We got a couple of minutes left. We got about half an hour left. Taking your calls at 323-642-1216. Talk about anything you want to talk about. Don't be afraid to call in, Jarrett. I'm just kidding. Now, we've got a lot of people calling in. We got a couple things we got to get to. Dan, here's an interesting question that we got. Who do you think the least talented forward on this team is?
If they had asked me 6 months ago, Bo Bennett, hands down, would have been the least talented forward on the team. But now, it's hard to say. Right now, the reason why is because we've brought in so many pieces to the equation. And I really haven't seen enough. But for right now, I could tell you who's the most overvalued forward on the team. What I mean by overvalued is they're playing on a line that they should not be playing at this stage in their career. And that sadly is Chris Kunitz. He is not top line anymore. Okay. A couple of years ago, no doubt the guy, you know, Crosby, Kunitz, Dupuis used to be the top line, one of the best lines in hockey. But as the years have gone down, as you get older, the body breaks down. You're not what you were a few years ago. And sadly for Kunitz, he's not top six. He belongs on that third line. And believe me, if he's on that third line and anchored a third line, that would be a great asset. I think that having him on the top line with Kessel and Crosby just hints back at that nostalgia word again. And eventually you have to get younger and you kind of have to lose the nostalgia. So what I would do technically is move Perron up to the top line and on the third line have Kunitz, Bonino, Dupuis, a really good third line. And that would be just as productive as the second line with Plotkinoff, Malkin, Hornquist, and a top line of Kessel, Crosby, Perron. Those would be three really lines. So that's how I feel about it. You know, we need to start realizing that the future is not going to be in 2 years a top line that still consists of Dupuis, who will be pushing 40, if not 40, Crosby, who will cross over the hump into his 30s, and Kunitz, who by then, sadly, will be in his late 30s. It's just not going to happen, folks. Jeff?
The worst player, or the least talented player, in my opinion, on this team is David Perron.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why I say it's David Perron is because he was brought over here in the idea that he was a top six forward. I don't believe he is at this point. I really don't. I don't think he has the offensive prowess that the Penguins thought that he was going to provide. Now, that's not to say that this season he can't, but natural ability, he just doesn't have it. Guys like Hornquist, Crosby, that's natural ability. Malkin, natural ability. Perron has to work really hard. And if he just played those dirty areas on the ice, he would probably score a lot more, and I wouldn't have to say that. But I also say that he's the most overvalued because we're paying almost $5 million for him. And that's a guy that put up 25, 30 points last season. Steve Downey did the same thing, and it cost us 1.1. So there's your argument. Now, I'm glad you brought up Kunitz because that's one of these other topics that I'm going to try to get to. And I'm going to try my best to get to the salary cap for a minute as well. If you want to call in, 323-642-1216. Chris Kunitz, at this point of his career, should be a third liner. He did have 50 points last year, but it was the lowest year for shots for him, for goals for him, and assists. But in any case, look, Chris Kunitz, for a long time since he's come over from Anaheim, has been a gift. The problem is the gift gets old. And that's what's happened to Kunitz. Now, we can argue about his iron deficiency all day long, but the fact is that Rutherford said, Johnston said, Kunitz, Bonino, Dupuis will play on that third line. So what I did was, when they did that, I came out with my own lines because I like to mix and match and do my own thing. And I've got line one, Kessel, Crosby, Perron. Line two, Plotkinov, Malkin, Hornquist. Line three, Kunitz, Bonino, Dupuis. Line four, which would have been Fair, Cullen, and Bennett. Now, I know what you're going to say. Well, you got Perron on the first line. You're right, I did. Because I thought that of the two, I thought Perron was a little younger, had a little more speed. But what have we seen all preseason? We have seen Kunitz up on that damn first line again. And we complained about this all last year. Get Kunitz off of Crosby's line. Because that line did not work at all. They had to keep taking Kunitz off the line and putting Perron up or trying Hornquist. But nobody wanted to play with Hornquist at all. Malkin can finally play. And here's the rub. Malkin can finally play well with Hornquist, right? And Malkin has a winger in Plotkinov he can mesh with. Now they're going to screw Malkin. That's exactly how that's going to happen. And the reason why I say that is because they haven't wanted to give Malkin anybody he could play with for years. Crosby always got first pick. And I totally get that, and I understand that. But the problem is that Malkin's just been saying, hey, guys, you know, give me somebody I can play with. You know, I can play with Hornquist, but I need somebody besides Nick Spaulding or Daniel Winnick to play with. So they go out and they get Plotkinov, and that line really seems to be meshing well. But how long do you think it's going to be before Kunitz gets taken off that first line and then they start doing the tilt-a-whirl circus train of lineups again? That's the way this could go, where I'm hoping not. But it leads me to like a final segment amongst segments. And it's in the term of a question. How long can this team function with five players making $20-plus million dollars per season? Even good teams stagger how much they pay other players in contracts. As a reference, Detroit, Nashville, and Chicago. But Chicago. And that's a really good question. How does this team go for the future when they have six or seven guys making up the bulk of the cap? Now, here's what the cap is really quick. I'll break down the numbers, and I'll let Dan have his run. $73,768,750 the Penguins are spending in cap contracts right now. However, it's a little less than that because you have to understand that I'm not sure if where I've got my numbers from applied Eric Fair being on LTIR or not. In either event, in either case, it looks like the Penguins will have, depending on LTIR, between 2 and 3 million cap. That's not bad, but it's not good either. Malkin makes $9.5 million per. Crosby makes 8.7, but with his bonus makes 12 million per year. Kessel makes 6 million a year, but with his bonus it's really 6.8. Letang 7.25, Marc-Andre Fleury 5.75, Hornquist 4.75, Perron 4.5, Cooney 3.85, Dupuis 4 million with his bonus. Scuderi 3.37. That's 10 players. 10 players that are eating up the bulk. But if you just want to take the top ones, Malkin, Crosby, Kessel, Kunitz, Hornquist, and Letang. Over $20 million per season. If you look at a team like Chicago, Chicago has the gruesome twosome.
Yeah.
They got Taze and Kane. They're making $20 million total for just two players. So in some ways you could say, well, you know, at least the Penguins have eight people for $20 million. Right, but these are both guys that are putting up 60, 70 points a season. At some point, this team is not going to be able to do that. And where this creates a real problem for the Penguins is a situation just like the one we have now, where we go out and we sign Phil Kessel and we don't have enough cap to add anybody on D. And you can't rely on draft picks because what did Rutherford do? He traded them all away for garbage. For absolute shit garbage like Daniel Winnick, who I might add, Nick Kiprios was laughing his ass off today when they said Daniel Winnick's back for a second tour of duty. Because the guy is a chump. even though he does have cute dogs. I've seen his dogs on Twitter, and they're adorable, but that's besides the point. But that's the problem with this team, salary cap. So the question, Dan, is, and I ask you, and then we'll round this out with an interesting way to take it off the air, is how can we expect, how long can we expect this team to win when you have five players that are making over $20 million per season? And how can you expect to compete against teams like Chicago, Boston, Detroit, Nashville, Chicago, I already said, when they stagger their offense so well?
This is really perplexing, because when you take all of these salaries into effect and you take less than half the team that has a bulk of your cap, eventually you have to start making sensible trades. And unfortunately, one of the weaknesses of one Jim Rutherford is he overpays for talent when it comes to forwards, but when it comes to defense, they're caught on the back end. Oh, we'll rely on draft. Okay. One of our top prospects went to Arizona and ended up in the minors because, honestly, the Coyotes stink, in the form of Ulf Samuelsson's son. He was one of our top defensive prospects. And in the trade to Klinkhammer, which didn't pan out at all, matter of fact, Klinkhammer lasted here all but a month and a half tops, and then he was out because he got traded. But you really cannot keep going like this. Eventually, you have to stop on the brakes, do some serious evaluating of your players, and find out who's expendable, who's going to go, who can you talk to that has a limited or no movement clause, and to possibly budging off of that and packaging them up for other players for less money. I'm going to say something tonight that's going to hurt a lot of feelings. Malkin's $9.5 million, for example. For $9.5 million, you can get several good quality players. Now, it's not a knock against Malkin, but I guarantee you this. If he does rescind his no-trade clause, or no-movement clause, however you want to put it, to go somewhere, the Penguins will end up eating up some of that cap of that 9.5 still. Same thing with Crosby, although I think Crosby will always remain in Pittsburgh. If anyone were to pick him up, we would have to eat up probably most of that bonus that he gets, which is about 3.3 mil per season, because he makes 12 per season, including his bonus, but 8.7 is the cap hit. Eventually, some of these guys are going to have to be traded. It's hard for people because we have people, and I don't mean offense by this, who believe that we can have all the top players and we're going to be okay. I've said this once, I'll say it again. This is not Major League Baseball, where you're the New York Yankees and you can buy every single great player there is for whatever, because there isn't a salary cap. Life doesn't work out that way in the NHL. Every team has that same salary cap number to meet every single year, and they have to be under that cap every single minute, because there will be cap penalties if you go over that cap limit. So this could be a very interesting season, because there are going to be moves made next summer, and I don't know who, but it's all going to be based on performance on the ice, by position. But this could be the last ride that we see the Penguins as we know it. Jeff?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think, you know, the big problem with Jim Rutherford, and I've said this for, two seasons
yeah.
now, is that the big problem with Jim Rutherford is he either overpays and undervalues, or he overpays and overvalues. And a good example of that would be, and we've talked about this so many times, I'll be glad someday when I don't have to talk about it. He undervalues a guy like Steve Downey. Now, granted, Downey took penalties, but he only cost us 1.1. But yet he gives that idiot, Winnick, like $2.5 million, $3 million, and Winnick doesn't do anything. And but yet he tries to negotiate with Winnick this off season, but tells Downey to go effectively get fucked. And so for me, it's like you can't overvalue. You can overvalue anybody, but it's like he tends to overvalue the guys he shouldn't, and he tends to undervalue the guys that are really good. You know what I mean? So, look, at the end of the day, this team, and we're going to get more into this as we do another show before the season begins, where we're going to cover the Penguins a lot more in depth, because I know we've been all over the place today. And if you want to call in, we've got about 14 and a half minutes left in the show. If you want to call in, you can. If you don't want to, that's fine, too. But the number is 323-642-1216. We got just a couple minutes left. And the one thing I wanted to say in final about the Penguins before I move to this last topic, which is not going to be a fun topic to cover because it involves cocaine and the NHL, is that the Penguins have a good forward unit. They got some depth to help down the middle. But at the end of the day, is the defense going to be enough? And we're going to cover that more in the next radio show. But let me get to this last part. There's an investigation going on by TSN. If you're unfamiliar with TSN, go to tsn.ca.com. And you can read all about Canadian sports. Cocaine use apparently is up in the NHL. From what I was able to find out today, that there are a lot more cocaine-positive tests going up inside the NHL. But what I found looking at this report, which was disturbing, isn't so much drug is on the rise in the NHL. It's the NHL stance on that drug. NHL Players Union and NHL are currently discussing adding cocaine to the banned substances list. Benadryl, Sudafed, steroids are on the banned substance list. Cocaine isn't. What? How is cocaine not on a banned substance? So currently, technically, if you get popped for it, they can't suspend you because it's not on their list of shit you can't put in your body.
Yeah.
But yet, if you go to the Olympics and you take a Sudafed because you got your nose running, oh, you're on steroids. You can't play. That's just the way this goes. The NHL doesn't even test for cocaine. The NHL tests for marijuana, steroids, Sudafed, etc. Maybe marijuana, because that's, you know, such a humongous drug. One that'll, you know, make you do stupid shit like eat all the tacos in the fridge. Not that I'm trying to give you my PSA on my drug stance, but how can cocaine not be on the list of banned substances? And here's proof that the NHL doesn't really give a shit. Jared Stoll, slap on the wrist. They're like, okay, you gave us a reasonable excuse. Fine. Ryan Malone, boom, fine. You know, now you have a situation where Molly was used in the Evander Kane situation. But we're not going to go there because I have my own opinions about that guy. But it's the same thing. The NHL is taking a weak stance on a lot of things. They don't care if you beat women, but boy, if you call, and I'm going to use a bad word. If you call a homosexual a faggot in the NHL, you will be suspended because they won't tolerate that, but it's acceptable to beat on a woman. Semyon Varlamov, anyone? Matthew Barnaby, anyone? Slava Voynov, anyone? Ron Hextall, anyone? Do I need to keep the list going and going? If the NHL is going to take a stance on something, take it all the way around. The fact that they take a light stance on domestic, at least the NFL is doing something. The NFL may be lazy about it, and they probably don't want to deal with it. But the NHL does nothing. Well, we'll let the legal process blah, 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 shut the fuck up. Because that's essentially what I feel. So back to this coke issue. Apparently, players being tested, they get tested two times. They can get tested during training camp, which is also the preseason, and then they can get tested once during the regular season. Also, there's random players can be selected any time. Your name can be pulled, and your name literally could be pulled 50 times. You're going to get tested 50 times. During the offseason, the NHL tests 60 players, but they're only allowed to test 60 players under the NHLPA rules. Don Fair, the NHLPA union executive, has raised the issue with the NHL saying, look, this drug is obviously making a comeback. We've got a lot of players that are getting caught with this stuff, doing this kind of stuff. We need to do something. And the NHL stance seems to be, less I know, the better I am. If these guys want to go out and do coke, I don't have a problem with that. That's their personal choice. But don't put them on a cover of a fucking cereal box either. And that's my point. You need to put that kind of banned substance on a list. If you want to do coke during the off season, I don't care what you do. But, you know, the whole point is why it dumbfounds me as to why cocaine is not on a banned substance list. Now, let me get to this last point, and I'll let Dan get his 2 cents in the final 8 minutes that we have. Last season in Toronto, there was a high-level executive working for the Toronto Maple Leafs who went to the Toronto police, and he wanted to address problems that he had with a bunch of players that were doing coke on the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is something apparently the NHL is aware of, a lot of Toronto people are aware of, but the NHL didn't step in and do anything. There were a lot of players doing coke, and the guys that weren't doing coke were hanging out with coke dealers. And so we sit here now and we say, you know, wow, the fans shouldn't have thrown jerseys on the ice. Yeah, they should have. Because they had 6 or 7 or 8 players, according to my source, that were coked up. And I don't know about anybody else, but when you play a sport like hockey, I don't see how coke could help you other than be aggressive as shit and make you skate real fast, you know? So that's my point. My point is that cocaine is up in the NHL. There's a lot more players doing it. The NHL isn't doing anything about it, and that's my point. You put cocaine on the you're not allowed to take this, the banned substance list. And because the way the NHL deals with this now, you did coke, Dan, you're going to go in the substance abuse program.
Oh, yeah.
Not jail, substance abuse. And you'll be okay. I promise. But if you do it again, we're going to put you in a level 2 substance abuse problem. How many abuse problems or how many Betty Ford clinics did Teo Fleury go through? 50, easy. The NHL didn't suspend for that kind of thing. But every other sport does. You get caught with coke in baseball, guess what? See ya.
Yep.
See ya. So my final point about this, and I'll let Dan wrap it up, is that the NHL needs to start taking a tougher stance on things. I don't care if you do drugs. That's your business. I would never do that, but that's if they want to do that, fine. But put the damn drug on the banned list. Ban coke and just tell them, you know what, you do this, you're suspended for a year, go get help. Because you know what, you shouldn't let a guy who's making $55,000 a game, who has a 5,500 coke habit a day, tell him he's going to go to rehab and keep giving him money. Because that's how the cycle continues. And I'm not saying that there's a bunch of toothless junkies running around in the league. I think what Dan Kordick's dead, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he was probably the biggest junkie everybody's ever known. Or Bob Probert even was a junkie. But the point is, the NHL has to take a tougher stance and that there is a widespread use of coke in the NHL, which is not good. Dan, your thoughts?
I'm going to quickly say this about domestic violence and to get back to coke. The only two organizations right now, sports-wise, that have anything remotely close to punishing people for domestic abuse, the NBA and the NFL. NHL, baseball, the PGA, the LPGA, the WTA that covers tennis, nope. They just turn a blind eye to it. Now, as far as cocaine goes, cocaine is a devastating drug, and there's no doubt about it. The statistics are out there. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter what your background is. It does not matter. It is a devastating substance, to say the least. It has taken millions of lives. Okay? However, for the NHL to turn a blind eye to this just goes back to my point that they don't care about player safety. I mean, think about it for a minute, folks. Hector Kane allegedly gave a girl a Molly. Why? So they can have sex, allegedly. No, I say allegedly because we don't know all the facts. But yet, he's allowed to participate in preseason, even though he's under investigation. Oh, don't worry, Patrick. It's going to be okay. And also to that point, as Jeff told me, in a theoretical situation, Dan, you got tested for coke. We'll just put you into rehab. You're going to be just fine. Addiction is a disease that hurts a lot of people, not just the person using the drug, but their teammates, their business partners, their families, etc. And to see the NHL turn a blind eye to this is heartbreaking. You mean to tell me that cocaine doesn't affect someone? It elevates your heart rate like you wouldn't believe. But they don't want them to know this, I guess. And it's really disturbing that one of the most dangerous and highly addictive substances there are, that actually was anti-sung about when I was a kid, called White Lines by Grandmaster Flash, which was actually about cocaine and was against cocaine, to see that the NHL does nothing about it but put you in rehab and just hope that the problem goes away. They have no idea what they're doing, and it's really sad and pathetic. So I have a challenge to the NHL tonight. Add cocaine to the list. If you're going to ban Sudafed and Benadryl because, well, you can take this for allergies instead, why not add cocaine to it? Why not add something that is extremely deadly to that list and take a stand? Or if they get busted with it, suspend them into rehab without pay. Give them 90 days in rehab to clean up. If they test positive, give them the 90 days. If they don't test positive, if that's the case, give them 60 without pay. Because these players need to remember something. Not only do their teammates matter, but their families also matter as well, as do the organizations that they represent. And it doesn't matter if it's off season or during the season, you're still representing the National Hockey League, and that should stand for something. Jeff, your final thought.
It's one of those things they need to start taking a stand on things, and I'm not the first to say that these guys are pieces of crap or anything, but I mean, the NHL has to finally stand up and take a stand for something. And stop comparing yourself to the NBA. Stop comparing yourself to the NBA or Major League Baseball or hockey. Be different. You know, they always talk about stand up and be counted, and you can play if you want to play. Well, play and just get these guys some help. Really quick before we go, check us out on PensVlogPost.com. That's PensVlogPost.com. You can check us out on Facebook. We got a group page. Also wanted to say hello to Gian Nicola, Haley Rice, and Tim Gardner. All three of them are new writers for us over on PensVlogPost.com. We launch tomorrow. We're looking very forward to it. We wanted to thank everybody for listening in tonight. And please, do yourself a favor. If you're out hooting and hollering and throwing back a few, get a designated driver and be nice to your cabbie.
That's right.
That's good stuff, right? So, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back with you probably tomorrow or the next day with the show talking about the Penguins and what to expect the first 5 days of this season. Thank you for listening. Have a great night.